Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I believe that this has always been undercurrent in American politics, not so much anti-Catholic bigotry, but anti-Christian bigotry. But if the Christian happens to be a Catholic, then it's aimed at the Catholics as well. We're seeing it again, not only last year, but there are little whiffs and puffs of it blowing up out of the wind when it comes to Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. We're going to talk about Brett Kavanaugh and anti-Catholic bigotry. Joining us this Wednesday afternoon is James Robbins. He's taught at the National Defense University and the Marine Corps University. He is author of the book Erasing America, and he's member of USA Today's Board of Contributors, author of a recent op-ed titled Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh will face anti-Catholic bigotry. Yes, bigotry. James, welcome to Issues Etc.
Oh, hey, Todd. How are you doing?
Very well. You say that the anti-Catholic tone was set last year. When was that? What happened?
Well, this was during the confirmation hearing for Judge Amy Coney Barrett and her appointment to the U.S. Circuit Court, when Senator Dianne Feinstein mentioned that she could hear the dogma loudly within her, given her answers, referring, you know, to her Catholic faith. So, I mean, this was, as I said in the thing, kind of a dogma whistle, as it were, out to the liberal left, but, you know, kind of said that this was going to come under scrutiny, that her private personal religious beliefs would then come under scrutiny for the Senate.
You say that there are Catholics that liberals like and Catholics that liberals don't. How would you make that distinction?
Oh, well, if you look, for example, at Justice Sotomayor, I mean, she was raised Catholic and still nominally, at least, says that she is. But as she pointed out, she's not in a, going to church or going to mass kind of way, kind of a more of a loosey-goosey kind of way, I suppose. Or Justice Brennan, appointed by Dwight Eisenhower, who was a Catholic, but who sided with the liberal wing of the court on most issues. So with those kind of Catholics, you know, liberals are fine with. But these days, it tends to be the people who are the more observant, people who take their religion very seriously, and, you know, Catholic or otherwise. These are the kind of people that liberals and especially progressives don't want to see in government, and certainly not on the courts.
What is the unstated, because often these kind of statements like the dogma lives loudly within you, or the kind of concerns that are being raised in kind of coded language about the latest Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, what's the unstated accusation being made here about kind of mass-going devout Catholics in public service?
Well, I think it's that their Catholic beliefs are going to be directly read into the law, whether that's about abortion or gay marriage or any other type of social issues where that may come into play. They're not giving the Catholic jurists credit for being well-rounded individuals of whom their, you know, their religion is only part of what they are made up of. There's also fidelity to the law, you know, strict construction of the Constitution, things that conservatives like. But sort of the progressive fear is that somehow, you know, the Vatican or something is going to control their thinking, and so that they will, you know, in a robotic kind of way, just reflexively decide against them on these social issues.
Is this kind of bigotry, is it equally applied to the religiously devout of other faiths, of Islam, etc.?
Well, certainly not with Muslims, at least from the progressive point of view, because according to the intersectional theory, anybody who's a Muslim is oppressed by the power structure. So, you know, they can't be on the wrong side, no matter what they're doing. And that's ironic, of course, since many Orthodox Muslim beliefs are completely contrary to what progressives would like to see in society. So that's just kind of a peculiarity of American politics. But with respect to other people, in particular Christians, I think anybody who is devout is kind of portrayed as foolish or outdated or stupid or something like that.
When I heard Senator Feinstein's comments in that hearing last year, I took it as kind of an unplanned, she was opining that it was not part of a broader strategy. But now these things do have to be strategized and planned. Do you think that the liberals are confident that openly displaying this kind of anti-Catholic bias will work in their favor? Certainly they might be able to sink a nominee. I don't think in this case, but it might work. But could it also work against them?
I think it certainly works with their base, which is largely contemptuous of religion. I don't think it would work well for them as a political strategy with the people that they really need to reach, who are moderate Republican senators and their base. So if you are taking out ads in states with senators you want to reach, you can't lead with, oh, well, this guy is a Catholic, so that's bad. That's probably not going to work for them. It can work to rally their base, and I think that's mainly where we're seeing it. But in terms of a broader political strategy, it will definitely hurt them if it comes across as just bigotry.
Talk about the correlation that you note in your USA Today piece between attendance at religious services and how Americans generally tend to vote.
Oh, yeah, this is very fascinating because you often hear about how certain denominations lean one way or the other. But what you find if you dig down in the data a little deeper, that the important variable is how devout people are, how often they attend services. And those who, for example, in 2016, who attended services at least once a week, Donald Trump won those by a wide margin, those people by 16 points. Among those who never would go to any kind of services, Hillary Clinton won by 2-1. It's like 62-31. So that shows more of this divide that we're talking about. It's not between the type of religion so much as between who's devout and who isn't. In the Jewish community, for example, the Reform Jewish community, you know, which is a less devout type of Judaism, they were strongly pro-Clinton. Whereas in the Orthodox community, people who are very devoutly Jewish, some neighborhoods in Brooklyn were voting for Donald Trump at 80%.
I'm trying to figure out how this will look during a Senate confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh, because many of the senators that will be grilling him are nominal Catholics themselves. How do they walk that fine line of saying, your kind of Catholicism is too extreme and mine actually qualifies me to serve in the U.S. Senate?
Well, I would be surprised if they attacked it directly. I think that they might do it through, you know, code language like we've seen. But it's possible that they could address it in terms of where do you draw the line between your faith and public service. They could raise the constitutional separation between church and state. They could even talk about their own cases, if they're Catholic, of where they draw the line and how they do it. So it could be taken on directly, but again, I think that that would probably hurt if it came across as being anti-Catholic.
You note an irony at the very beginning of your piece that in the past, anti-Catholic bigotry in the United States generally came from groups like the KKK, and now it's coming from what many would consider to be kind of the mainstream of the left. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. In the past, traditionally, groups like the KKK were motivated by nativism, kind of anti-papism, and these kind of things, because many Catholics were like Irish or Italian or, you know, not Northern Europeans. So this was the rationale behind their opposition. And I use the example of Justice Pierce Butler, who was appointed by Warren Harding in 1922, who was opposed by the Klan. because he was a Catholic. Of course, later he turned out to be the only dissenter in a notorious case called Buck v. Bell, in which the Supreme Court upheld a Virginia law allowing forced sterilization of people in mental institutions, which has since been overruled because it was barbaric. And at the time, Butler, the lone dissenter, was blamed because it was like his Catholic conscience was motivating him to stand in the way of this law. Well, good for him.
You say that Kavanaugh, being Caucasian, being male, and being a conservative, you say he's already beyond redemption to progressives. What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, he's exactly the kind of person that progressives don't want on the court. You know, another white guy, right? A white conservative guy, a family man. He's religious. I mean, how many strikes are against him in the progressive worldview? He's the worst kind of guy for them. I've seen some articles, you know, arguing that President Trump basically miscarried justice in a way by not nominating a woman or, you know, a person of color, that it was somehow illegitimate to have this white guy, you know, being put on the court. But it's just the way the progressives think. They view absolutely everything through the lens of race and gender and other classifications. And so automatically a white guy is just going to be no good to them.
But it wasn't when President Barack Obama had kind of a failed attempt to nominate someone to fill a seat, wasn't that a white guy too? I mean, he wasn't a conservative, but he was a white guy too.
Well, yeah, he was a Republican too. I mean, that was just, you know, him playing a political game. He found a at least so far as his advisors were concerned, a fully acceptable, malleable, liberal white guy Republican that they thought they could slip through, make it easier for the Senate to vote on. But the Senate wisely chose to delay the confirmation until we got a new president. And so then we get Neil Gorsuch.
Finally, then, with about 30 seconds, how do you expect this to ultimately play out, this attempt to make a Catholic boogeyman out of Brett Kavanaugh?
I think it's going to fail. He doesn't really come across as, you know, a scary guy. And the left is so unhinged in their opposition to absolutely anybody that I don't think it's going to stand out. They're going to attack him for other reasons. And ultimately, I think it's going to fail. But if we do see Judge Amy Coney Barrett come, you know, before the Senate for a confirmation in the future, I think they're going to save that fire, especially for her, since she's a member of this group called People's Praise. And religion is kind of a higher profile for her. So I think that's how they're going to go after her. Plus, since she's a woman, you know, they need another tack for attacking her.
James Robbins has taught at the National Defense University and the Marine Corps University. He is author of the book Erasing America. He's a member of USA Today's Board of Contributors and author of a recent op-ed titled Supreme Court Nominee Brett Kavanaugh Will Face Anti-Catholic Bigotry. Yes, bigotry. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp from Pastor Ted Geese. We will discuss the financial downside of cohabitation. So often people go into cohabitation, among other things, for financial reasons. It's to save money, but there's a financial downside. Helen Raleigh will tell us what it is, and we'll respond to listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008 for a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more. We'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.